Welcome to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. I started this show to talk about all of the interesting, complex, paradoxical, and sometimes uncomfortable aspects of the human experience. If you get anything from this show, the greatest compliment you could give me is to share this show with somebody that you think the message may resonate with, or to head to iTunes and give us a 5-star review. Additionally, if you want to interact with me, you can follow me at @RickAlexander_ on Instagram. Without further ado, on to the show. So this is the second part of Wednesday's two-part shows. If you're someone that likes to keep up with the show, I probably won't be on the channel again until Friday, maybe Monday. I've got some content I'm working on. We'll see if I can get it ready by then. So either way, you have plenty of time to digest this material if you are someone that likes to keep up with the show. If you're just coming to it for the first time because maybe someone shared it or you saw it or something like that, and you want more information on today's guest, the show that I aired right before this was Aaron's lecture from the Robust Human Summit with some of his thoughts on leadership development and philosophical development. So go check that out if you want to learn more from our guest today. And of course, Aaron and I both teach a course called The Trials, which is a 12-week online men's course. So if you're interested in that, check out wayoftrials.com or look at the show notes of this episode. Without further ado, on to the interview with Aaron and I. Welcome back to another episode of Morning Coffee with your host, Rick Alexander. Today, I am chatting with my buddy, Aaron Guyette. He is the chief of physical strategy with the Special Forces Experience. So you guys have been listening to this show for a while, or for you that have been, you know that the trials course is opening enrollment September 1st through 11th. And that's like this 12-week online course that we have developed with the Special Forces Experience to help you think a little bit deeper about your life, to help you actually take the driver's seat in your own life, to program your own movement practice, to rifle through the unconscious patterns that are contributing to a worse experience for your life, and just really start taking control. So finally, I have Aaron Guyette on the podcast. He is the other, you know, me and him kind of tag team this project. And then, of course, Jeff DePozzi, the CEO of the or founder of Special Forces Experience, pops in every 4 weeks throughout that course. We've also got the Slack channel, which is like this place where everybody going through the course can lean on each other. Aaron's instrumental in that Slack group as well, constantly giving people advice. So I wanted to do this conversation in person, which is why I've waited so long to actually do it, but it looks like COVID is making that really difficult to do. And so finally, I have the distinct pleasure of welcoming you on the show. So thanks for being here, buddy.
Man, thanks for having me. The pleasure is truly all mine. I'm super honored to be on here and just talk. I mean, the fact that I got to meet you but now I'm like deep friends with you is phenomenal. So I'm even more stoked that I can contribute in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the Special Forces Experience, the process is this like deeply physical. It's like a lesson in suffering. It's like if you want to go through suffering and pull out all of the wisdom that has for you, the process is the place to do that. We hold it up in Northern Canada. And that is such a transformative process for the people that go through. But oddly enough, it was extremely transformative for me as a cadre just because I was working with such high caliber cadre. And so that is the basis of this conversation and why I wanted to share your work with the audience, because it had such a profound effect on me that week while we were up there. And of course, now the audience who's listening to this now, you know, on Wednesday, I aired a lecture that you did for the Robust Human Summit. So now people have a little bit of an idea about who you are. So let's get into it. Let's kick off with the icebreaker question, which is what makes you feel the most alive right now? What are you the most excited about?
Yeah, it's seeing whether it's my wife, my daughters, my son, the Marines that I work with, the cadre that I get to work with, the team that I get to work with at Living.Fit, or some of the coaches that I work with through that. It's seeing it's seeing that aha moment where they realize that they can be intentional in leading themselves and in leading others. And by the nature of that intentionality, they can actually raise up other leaders. So it's this whole, what drives me, what I guess is my purpose on this planet, in this universe, as I can at least understand at this point in my life, is intentionally developing leaders of leaders. So not gleaning a bunch of followers and having people, you know, do what you want them to do for you, but it's truly developing somebody into a leader, so much so that they are able to develop leaders, you know, next to them or with them or under them, or however you want to see that, you know, hierarchy or fairly flat structure, but yeah.
Right. So something that's been on my mind and my heart since the pandemic started is leadership. And so I've not had anybody on the show to talk about it. I've talked a little bit about contemplative leadership, but man, we've gotten a really good case study in poor leadership over the last 6 months. And that's not a political statement at all. I just mean like all governing bodies in general. Has that been your experience, what you've noticed, just a lack of direction in leadership coming from the world?
Yeah, like no decision is going to be a good decision, right? But if you make no decision at all, then that's far worse, right? Mm-hmm. And so leaders, nobody wants to take responsibility. And I shouldn't say nobody, just throw that out there into the ether as like zero people.
There are people. In general, it's tough though for people.
But in general, the average person does not want to take responsibility. So they're looking for something or someone that they can blame. And so that if they make a bad decision, then it's that something or that someone else, they don't have to own it, right? And it's even prevalent in the Marine Corps. Now, I've been absolutely blessed with Living.Fit. I've been blessed with the Special Forces experience. I've been blessed even with the Mobilization Training Battalion, the unit that I'm in right now, to just have incredible leadership. People that are totally down to not only take responsibility for their decisions, but take responsibility for the decisions that are made in their presence, even necessarily under them. But it's like, okay, this person did that. They're kind of in proximity to me. I will own their crap, their failure, their mistake, so that we can actually fix it. And that's the thing right here, right? It's like the moment you own it is the moment you can start actually working on it and fixing it. But until then, nobody can fix anything. So it's just all about this blame game bull crap. And yeah, that's beyond just political, right? That's in business. That's in the nuclear family. To me, the pandemic is this incredible blessing, if you look at it this way, to take control of your life, your decision, your family, the things that you're a part of. Like we can see where that leads if we don't. But yeah, that's absolutely been my experience as well. And it's sad, man. It's rough to watch that.
Totally. Yeah. Are you familiar with the scapegoat mechanism from Leviticus? Are you familiar with that?
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I know the
story scapegoat. About how for a long time tribes would sort of put these two goats in the middle and they would kind of like lay all their problems on it. And then the one they'd like run off into the wilderness and kind of, it's interesting. The French philosopher Ray Girard he's done a lot of work on the scapegoat mechanism. He says it is the most pervasive mechanism that underlies all modern cultures. Just this idea that we're so, you know, we're like almost conditioned to be blameless, to like, it's not okay to be blamed for something or I don't know. It's like we're in this position where nobody, as you said, nobody can do anything about anything because nobody owns anything. It's like nobody's fault, so no one can fix it. And we're like in a place right now where in that chaos, we like badly need order. And that's, to me, like that's what the leader presents, the opportunity for order amidst all of this chaos.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because in that story, right? So there's the two goats, one of them gets sacrificed for the sins and the bad stuff and the evil that we know. Mm. The scapegoat is for the stuff that we don't know. Like, well, we know that probably some people are being dishonest. Some people aren't, you know, being authentic, they're not being vulnerable, they're not sharing what it is that they're doing behind closed doors or whatever. So just in case, we're gonna release this goat into the wilderness and let it carry those things with it. Clearly it didn't work if you follow the history of Israel. Right. You know, clearly they kept falling on their face, which sucks. At the same time, you know, I get it. Yeah. I mean, okay, I don't know this. So, you know, let's put the blame out there in the ether as opposed to, you know, holding on to it and owning it. But then as soon as you know, I mean, I think that's the issue is people know and they're still trying to put it on the scapegoat. It's like, no, you know that this is happening. Like now you have to own some part of it.
Right. And to make it semi-political, but again, not to take a side on in politics, but to just make an observation about it. You know, a lot of people that do like Trump, one of the reasons that I've heard that people like him is because they believe that he's just sort of saying whatever's on his mind, like, which is just definitely feels very accurate, right? But I almost wonder, like, could our society handle a leader that truly stepped up and like took full ownership? Like, you know, we screwed up, we didn't understand, we didn't have a good idea of it, we're getting a better idea of it, we're doing our best, and here's how we're doing our best. I almost wonder, would that be, you know, like true authenticity, truly owning the problem, would that be accepted by our society today?
I think it could only be accepted by our society if we were able to see that person romantically as the anti-hero, right? That we love to be about in film, right? In story. It's like, this person's bad, they're bloody, they're gritty, they're horrible. At the same time, they're righting wrongs. And potentially in a completely evil and wrong way, right? Judge and jury and, you know, all the rest, and executioner. Right. But man, it's our culture loves that story. Like it just crushes in the box office. And that to me, that makes me feel very comfortable. It's and even scared, right? That's the story that we love, and so then I think that's the story that we're seeing on both sides of the aisle, right? And not even in a political way, but that's how the human is, the person that's outside of politics, that's protesting or rioting or looting or protecting stores to the point of, you know, excessive force and all, you know, right, all of this stuff. It's like, I think that's what we're watching is like. And I think it's totally on both sides of the aisle. I think it's a human condition. And I think it's a rotten one. And what it would be better if we could actually handle the truth, like handle it, not go out and be a vigilante with it or take matters into your own hands and perpetrate evil, back as a reciprocal response or, you know, sort of this law of reciprocity, like eye for an eye, old stuff, right? It's like, no, if we could actually take the truth and then respond in love, well, there you go. Now you're actually going to have an ongoing solution. I mean, and it's not going to be solved today, right? It's not going to be solved a year from now, but that's a far better solution because now you're taking the onus, you're taking the pain, you're taking the responsibility, and the evil, and you're turning that into love versus turning it back into hate. It's like, okay, you hated me, so now I'm just going to hate you back harder. So whoever yells the loudest, whoever hurts the hardest, that person wins. And we've already seen if you open up a history book, it doesn't work.
Right.
You know, that's
right.
Not the solution.
Right. Yeah. I almost think today our culture, you know, and just for the listeners, like I'm exploring these ideas in real time here with Aaron too. So, but it appears to me that our culture expects reactivity. Like they think that is leadership. It's like, well, if, you know, so for example, if the pandemic happened and the leadership of our country, CDC, World Health Organization, whatever, came out and they were like, look, we don't know. We got to figure it out. So we're going to take some time with this. It's like, that would be, you know, it's almost like we just expect, like, just react, like, just as long as you have a reaction, then I think that we're moving in the right direction. And I can't prove that in any way, but it does seem in workspaces too, not just on a national level, but in your local economies, it does seem like the culture today, because it is so fast paced, because we think growth at all costs are kind of like our ideals and values, it does seem that we are constantly expected to react. And so the reason I'm bringing that up is because, you know, and I'd love for you to just riff on this a bit, but what does the person who's stepping into a leadership position in their family and in their community and in their company and in their job, like, how do they push back against that in some way? How do they start creating space to make more informed decisions, to become the person that can transmute that hate with love? Like, how do we, where does that start?
Yeah, I think it's learning to tell a better story. Because right now, think about it, the narrative that we've been listening to or hearing, and this is not just the last 10 years, this is thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of years, more than likely, right? The story has been this eye for an eye, reactive, and it's only accelerated because of the Industrial Revolution and the technology revolution, right? All of these things have just taken that narrative and then sped it up to a maddening pace. And it's a narrative that is driving humanity. and that's what we tend to do, right? We put ourselves in the narrative that is the world around us, and we play our part. Whether we intentionally decide to do it or subconsciously get pulled into it, right? It's happening. And so if we can learn to tell a better story as leaders, a story where maybe it isn't growth time right now. Maybe it's time to, reset and adjust and get, and that's what's going to make us better, so that then the next growth is a far greater growth rather than a devastating type growth, right? Where you're building the jet as you're flying it at supersonic speed, and they're fart and falling off, and you're like, oh, that's fine. We didn't need that part anyways. We'll figure out this next piece, and before you know it, it's just you in your seat, and the plane is gone, and you're going fast, and you think you're growing, but you're just going fast down.
Right.
So learning to tell a story, learning to weave in the people that are on your team, learning to weave in what that might look like for them, giving them direction, in terms of great communication, so that they can understand viscerally, like, what I'm a part of, giving them purpose through that, right? Through that process, or finding out, or maybe shutting up and listening, so that you can tell a better story, right? For that particular person, and what their purpose is and what their values are, and being able to then, like you said, riff that story together, so that, hey, you and I are both on the same team, and this is where we want to go. What does that look like? What does that look like from your vantage point? What does that look like from mine? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, so two things that I'm hearing you sort of allude to there. One is, creating a vision that people can see, so that, cause they can't see what's in your mind. So you as a leader, right, that is like probably one of the chief jobs of a leader, is to paint a vision, that to articulate a vision that people can conceptualize, so that they know what they're walking toward, so that they know that they're not lost. You're the one that's sort of the point man out in the front, kind of exploring unknown territory. And as you turn around, you've got to be able to paint that picture so people know where they're going. And the better you can do that, seems like the better leader you'll be able to, at least more, you'll be able to inspire people to go in the direction you want them to go. Because if you don't know, they definitely don't. So I think that's one thing that you alluded to there. And another is just, the organizing principle really matters too. Like, what is the animating force behind the decisions that you are making, right? Because I think, we value growth, and I think there's so much that our capitalistic society has given us on the back of growth. I think we've lifted people out of poverty in a really massive way. And I think we can acknowledge that. And also, this has been on my mind lately, like, can we also acknowledge that growth shouldn't be the top? It shouldn't be the pinnacle. It shouldn't be the organizing principle, because things that grow at all costs, like, what, that's cancer. That's what cancer does. It grows at the cost of the host that's actually making its life possible. And that feels to me like what we're going to do to the earth and to our society if we don't find a better pinnacle to walk toward.
I feel like we've done that to our souls. So if we've done it to our souls, then it's only a matter of time before it's out in the environments that we walk around in, you know, because we can't help but whatever's in our soul, right? Whatever's our purpose, whatever our beliefs are, whatever our values are, putting that out into our environments, putting that into our families, putting that into our businesses, putting that into our world, physical world, but also, you know, spiritual and mental. Yeah, it's super gnarly. So in order to have, I think, a purpose that's not right growth, because then now you're growing for growth's sake. And what you said is, I have to write that down. And if you didn't write that down, make sure you write that down. Growth at all costs, or growth as the only value, is cancer, right? That's exactly what cancer is.
Just totally
spreads nonstop. But in order to have a deep driving purpose that isn't growth, right? Because then, you know, and this is the story anyways, right? It's like, oh, well, success. Well, what is success? Well, it's getting a bigger house. Well, what happens when you get the bigger house? Well, just get a bigger house. It's like, what? Like, okay, at what point do my house now covers, you know, the world? Is it big enough yet? Nope, get a bigger house. And that just, it's just asinine if you walk it out a couple of steps, let alone all the way to its end, right?
Right.
But in order to establish a purpose that isn't just growth, it's not just success for success sake, or sex, or, you know, money, or, you know, all of these things that are going to end up being destructive at some point.
The right, more you power.
Walk down them, right? The power, yeah. Then in order to have that, I think you have to establish some belief, right? Some understanding of who you are in time and space, and what is this thing that is your sense. And I get that the idea of saying, you know, all truths are true or whatever, it sounds really sexy and it sounds really good on its surface. But then, you know, all I would say is it's to somebody that is the case, like, well, now you've created a very slippery slope for any one of your purposes, for any one of your values, right? Because if you like sex, then more sex is better. If you like money, then more money is better. If you like power, then more power is better. Because and it's true, because all truths are true. It's what I'm feeling, and so it's true, and so then that it must be. It is. But the issue with that to me is that saying all truths are true is still a truth claim. Right. So now that is the truth claim versus another belief or another truth claim. Right. So you can say that, but then what you're saying is you're saying that, you know, you can't have a truth claim because all truths are true, but you by nature of you saying that, that is the truth claim. Right. So then therein lies the rub. It's like, oh, well, obviously then you believe that there is truth claims because you've just claimed that as the truth. So I think it's very important for leaders to establish values and beliefs that are truly solid, that they understand through and through. Because if you're not standing on solid ground and telling people what to do, or like what you said, painting a picture, right, and helping people establish their purposes and having a deep seated purpose yourself that isn't, you know, power, money, or, you know, sex or whatever, right? Then you can actually move somewhere. But if you don't understand the beliefs that you have, then there's no point in painting a picture, and there's no point in establishing a purpose, because you're not standing on anything. So you're not really going to go anywhere, right? You can make a map, but then that map actually doesn't exist in reality, because there's nothing that you're walking on or walking towards, because you can't because you don't have ground and you don't have gravity, right?
Right. Yeah. There's nothing foundational that you can build a life on. And I think, when I was listening to your lecture, at the beginning of it, you talked about your belief system creating the foundation for the rest of your life, for your leadership. And I think, I think that's what Socrates really gave us as a people, is he exposed the lunacy of not knowing what you actually want or what the hell you're talking about, right? And that's what the Socratic method is. You reframe their statement as a question so you can see. And when you do that to people, it pisses them off. And the reason it does is, at least I found in my own life, is because people don't know what they want. They don't know what their foundational beliefs are. They haven't used ethics and reason and logic to pull those foundations apart. And because of that, they don't understand that their trajectory is wrong, right? It's like, you can't go anywhere. And so, man, that's such a, so two things. One, that's amazing just because people, that's almost the easy part. You know, it's like, that's not the building your life part. That's what you build from. And so most people just get stuck in this weird part where they don't have that foundation. And so we have to learn to, I don't know, how did you go about starting this process of using logic, using reason, using ethics, using philosophy to start building out that foundation? Was it just literally asking yourself these questions, like, is that true for me? Or
So what I found is, humans we're really good at mimicry, right? So we're just, in the beginning, we're just going to mimic, right? Our little mirror neurons are really there in the most formative years of your life. And so maybe you had a rough start, right? Maybe you had some really shitty examples or whatever. I don't know. Am I allowed to cuss?
Yeah. CNN, whatever you want.
All right. maybe you had some bad examples or whatever. But so what I was doing is I was just mimicking, right? And mimicking in my young 20s, late teens and young 20s. And so then I think what started me on it was asking, what am I doing? Why do I like this? Why do I dislike that? And I started, kind of doing maybe some teed up ones that, they're just lobs, right? Easy to crank out of the park kind of. But then what that drove me towards is more the question, and these are the existential type questions, which the cool part is we have brains that can think about thinking, you know what I mean?
Yeah, metacognition.
We have this incredible power that we almost never use, right? Just again, broad sweeping general there. Man, if we just even took a couple of moments in the morning or, whenever your power time is or whatever, to actually just think, why do I believe what I believe? And then, whether it's stream of conscious journaling or writing it out or just even having that dialogue with yourself, it can be, the thing is what will tend to happen is you will then end up in this kind of chaotic place because you won't have answers.
Destabilizing. Yeah.
Yeah. You will not have answers at the beginning. And so it's very chaotic. It's very confusing. And so then I think what the normal human, and I think is a very normal response, we pull back from that and we, I don't like that feeling. When instead it's sit in it a little bit. And the more, it's the process, right? The more you endure the suffering, it's not so much about the pain or it's not so much about, it becomes much more mental. It becomes much more spiritual. You start to pull things out of it that you otherwise would not have discovered about yourself. You would not have discovered about the world. You would not have discovered. And so that was the beginning, right? Is the chaos. But then it's are there structures or are there things that I can do these thought experiments with and actually kind of get somewhere versus what I did, and I just dove into every religion. Cause this is theology has been doing this for a really long time. And then it got pretty clean and sexy, if you will. And it was not sexy, right? But we see it as that right now. in the modern world.
Yeah, like simple, definitely.
With philosophy, right? And mm-hmm. and like, you know, what you were saying, Aristotle and you know, all these Greek and Roman philosophers, like they established some pretty cool things that now we can stand on the shoulders of giants, right? And get into that, I guess, create less chaos, right? In those really chaotic questions. So then that's what I started just diving into every religion. And then what that did is that led me to this understanding that all of these things are philosophical in nature. They're not, this is area where science cannot tread, right? You can do a thought experiment, right? And so when you say experiment, you're saying, oh, or I'm bringing science in it. And in the fact that you're doing, you know, doing something and then seeing the result, yes. But these aren't physical things. These are all metaphysical realities.
Right, right. It's definitely not linear either.
No, absolutely not. So then for me, I had to, in order to put some handles on it, I was like, okay, well, what is logic? And is there such a thing? What is truth? And is there such a thing? You have to then start to establish some of these handles in order to move yourself kind of forward into what you realize wasn't chaos. It was just really confusing when you first got there, right?
Totally.
It was less chaotic. There is some harmony there. But you're right. You're on that edge, right? You're on that line of harmony and chaos. So you are going to see and experience and feel that. I don't know. I feel like I'm poking at this cloud of unknowing with you.
Yeah.
Audibly, and I'm like, I don't want to go like down the drain and lose people. You have to be able to put some handles in it in order to have it move you forward. Or you have to be able to set a structure in order to stand on a solid foundation. Because without those things, right, without some of that venture or adventure even, right, metaphysical adventure, but adventure nonetheless, without that, you're going to be standing on nothing, moving nowhere, and thinking you're going somewhere, right? Mm. Like, this is where here's the vision. Here's your purpose, but you're literally in zero gravity, so you're not moving anywhere. So I think the best way to make this concrete for people so that you can understand it or get it a little bit more viscerally is it's just like movement as a human, right? So I love teaching training and physiological stuff, right? And so this is where science can tread. And it's knowing where your body is in time and space, right? Proprioception. And the better you get at that, the better you can move, right? And the less injuries you incur and the less problems you have and the more efficient you are and the more effective you are in sport or in running or, you know, whatever it might be. And the reason for that is because now you've mastered gravity in the ground. Mm-hmm. And not only mastered the gravity in the ground, right? But you're also mastering your movement with gravity in the ground and all the different parts and types and styles of your movement. So taking something that's philosophical and metaphysical, bringing it into more of a physical reality, right? To me, that is training. To me, that is play. To me, that is practice, right? That's we're doing that physically, right? And we can sort of master or continue mastery in that. Well, you could do the same thing in the philosophical and metaphysical realm, but you got to get in there and you got to do it every day, you know?
Yeah. And I think that it's that questioning of your own belief system at first that does feel destabilizing, which keeps people from wanting to go further. And then, you know, the thing that you don't understand about that, I think when you're in this mode of wanting to protect yourself from the harsh realities of the world, is that actually though, once you enter into that chaos, pain does something interesting, which is starts to strip away shit that doesn't matter. Like, I noticed this, I was going back and forth with this girl when I was like 19 texting and, you know, it's like, you can't figure out if they like you. It's just like hell for a 19-year-old kid, right? Like with your hormones everywhere. And I remember I was texting this girl at SDSU, San Diego State, and I'm in selection. And like, it just hit me like, well, I don't care about that at all. Like I care about, like, that doesn't mean anything to my life. Like it really did physical pain. I mean, create the, the ability for me to prioritize what actually mattered. What I found is intellectual confusion, chaos, and pain is very similar. Like that rock bottom moment in life, it strips away everything that doesn't matter. And what you're left with is something that's foundational. You know, you're left with something that feels much more real. And so pain does a good job at pulling the delusion away.
Yeah, I've got an incredible story. Like I started to go down this nihilism where just nothing mattered. There is no values. There is no beliefs. We're just here. We're going to die. And then that's it. And so who freaking cares? Like, yeah, I'll play the puppet role in front of people so that I'm not like a weirdo and an outcast. But nothing matters. So really at the end of the day, I can kind of do whatever I want, right? Which is it's a really sad place to be. But then there was immediate pain, and sitting in a jail cell, right? Like, why? How did I get here? And what is going on? And then it was like, well, does nothing really matter? Because I feel deeply that this moment matters, and it's a painful moment, and it's a moment of suffering. But I feel very deeply that this matters. And, maybe I'm just coming up with a construct to find my way out or whatever. But the thing is, like, I'm trying to come up with a construct to find my way out. Otherwise, if nothing really mattered, then suicide is like the best option, or sitting in a jail cell doesn't really matter. Right. Or, hurting people doesn't really, but it does, there is a knee jerk response to those types of things. And for me, it was like, okay, well then what is it? What matters then? Why am I, and that was the beat. Like for me, that was my rock bottom. And it was a very painful, mentally and spiritual, pain. Right.
Yeah.
And yeah, there was some physical suffering that went along with it as well, but yeah. And it forced me to really, okay, think twice, think three times, walk this out four steps versus, just the one step that you're doing.
Right. Right. And, at least at this juncture in my life, I'm not someone that wants to sell somebody else on my philosophies or theologies or beliefs or anything at all. That being said, what I did notice about my life is same thing. Apathy will start to unravel everything rather quickly. Like it's kind of, once the spiral starts, shit stops mattering quick. When things stop mattering, it's a tough place to walk yourself out of. And what's actually happening there is you are being told by your life, let's say, that you have put the wrong thing at the top of your hierarchy. Because the thing that people don't understand is that your value system, it makes all of the decisions you make are going to be in service to your value system, whatever that is. So whatever you've put at the very pinnacle of your value system, that is, you've made decisions that have led you somewhere. So there's this part in the first five books of the Bible and the Ten Commandments where what's the commandment? Thou shalt have no other gods, besides me. And you might think like, that seems stupid when I was a kid. I was like, why? And it's like, well, put money there, put power there, put yourself there, put greed there, put anything you want there, right? That's incorrect. And it will lead you to that rock bottom apathetic moment. And I think I believe that's a nod toward our psychological makeup, which is we have to prioritize something. You've got to pick something. And whatever it is that you do pick, all of the other decisions you make will be in service to that thing. And so if you pick the wrong thing, you'll know, because your life will be a mess. That's what I found personally.
Yeah. It's funny that you said that you use the word put or place, right? Mm-hmm. The good part of that, so it's a double-edged sword. The good part of that is that you can choose. The other edge, though, the bad part of that is that if you don't choose, trust me, you're still choosing.
You don't get a choice. Yeah, there's no neutral ground. That's an important part, actually, because I think people do, you go to church and it's like, well, I can buy some of it, but not all of it. And then you go to you read a book and you're like, well, he's got some good points, but I can't buy all of it. And people just don't want to decide in some way because it's tough, right? Because you got to stand for something. Same reason people don't probably want to own a lot of the things that are going wrong in their community, family, and business is Well, because you got to stand on something, and that means you've got to take the brunt of what standing on that is going to give you.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It almost like, you know, listening to a guru or reading a book or whatever. It's almost like, oh, all you have to do is put the star on the top of the Christmas tree, and then everything will align and it'll all be good. And no, you cannot put the star on there, but then your actions and your associations and your environments are going to put their version of that star on there, and it will align from that. And then that thing will be the thing that you're, you know, insatiably going after, whether you are consciously choosing it or not. And I think for me, it was like realizing that I was living a large part of my, of all the aspects of my life, unconscious, like subconscious, just
right,
allowing things to just move me and push me and pull me wherever it, they wanted to push and pull me. And then I decided, actually, I put apathy or nihilism, you know, there, and right, then, yeah, shit got real super quick and real bad, you know, when I made that choice. And then it was like, okay, well, okay, I can choose, because I chose that. So what do I choose? And then that began the adventure, right? Philosophical, metaphysical.
Adventure,
but like, of life.
If you can, I tweeted this the other day, but I'm like, if you can speak from the heart and seek the truth and have the courage to sit back and see what happens, I literally know of no better way to live a worthwhile adventure. It will be the adventure of a lifetime, because like we just said, you're making decisions in service to what you put up there. And so as a leader, you absolutely cannot lead people if you're being led by the wrong thing. So I think that's where this really ties into what we're talking about. And I look at my 20s and I was just really just putting things there. Like, oh, let's try money. Okay. Let's try status. Yeah. Let's try business. I would try that. Yeah. And then I realized like, oh, if you use the word sin, you know, in that sense of missing the mark, you know, it's like, oh, I'm not being punished for my sins. I'm being punished by my sins, right? Like I missed the mark. I put the wrong thing at the top of my value system, and it has made my life miserable. And I can't lead anybody, including myself, anywhere out of this rock bottom moment. And that is the opportunity of a lifetime, because once you see what doesn't work, now you have the ability to start figuring out what might, you know, start being
open
to other things.
Yeah, you said you don't want to put your belief system, you know, in people's mouths or on them or whatever. And the thing is, I don't like, I think that that's a disservice to the human, to the person. Like, there's so much adventure that they will be able to cover and discover and know by me not telling you how it is, but me saying, well, here's some things that you can try. Here's some things that you can look at. Here's my story. You know, see what, you know, here's what I went through. Here's what my buddy over here went through. Here's a book. Here's some other stories. Go, like, if those things can help you, awesome. If you need something else as your guide or whatever to help you, awesome. But go and begin that adventure, right?
Yeah.
I guarantee you will not come back, you know, it will not be found wanting, right? It will be the most fulfilling and frustrating and exciting and debilitating and, you know, all of the things, right?
It will, right.
But that's, we're not here to, you know, I mean, some of us end up, you know, following the path of least resistance and just sort of stagnating and then reaping that, which is super sad, you know, and ultimately death. And I'm not saying death in a physical sense, but like spiritually and mentally and, you know, much more horrible deaths than the physical death in my understanding from my perspective. But yeah, I wouldn't want to take that adventure away from somebody. It's like, hey, I'm not here to tell you that you need to believe what I believe. I will say that obviously you need to believe something
now.
And you need to go figure it out.
Right. You know, right now I'm pulling apart, I'm creating this lecture series on the hero myth, because I'm releasing a lecture series with my Ambitious Heroes and Heartache when I re-release the book. And one of the things that I never knew, I grew up reading like T.H. White's Sword in the Stone and stuff, what I never knew is that there's a moment where the hero gets to the Holy Grail, like finally gets to it, right? And when you get to the Holy Grail, which is like what the conception of like ultimate meaning in life, you have to ask it the right question. And if you don't ask it the right question, you're banished from it and you cannot taste it. You cannot drink from the cup of ultimate meaning. And what's so fascinating about that is what the question is who does the grail serve? This is, okay, so this is, pull this apart from religion, pull this apart from everything you know. This is archetypes, this is writers coming up with this story who created this hero's journey. So the final question, you get to this all this life of meaning, you've quested, you've done the things, you've gone the route, you've gone through the dark jungle, you've gotten there, the dark forest, whatever, you face the demons. And then you still have to realize that it's not about you, because if you put yourself there, you cannot go from the hero, the knight, to the benevolent king. You cannot be good for people until you understand that the thing that you have to ask is, who does the grail serve? And what's interesting is there's so many people, I realize as I listen to this, there are so many people right now living a life with a wife, a kid, a job, like they are surrounded by goodness in every direction. They have all of the meaning you could ever imagine around them, and they can't taste it because they cannot ask the right question. They cannot take themselves out of that pinnacle of their value system. They cannot stop serving themselves. And so they just work more and they try to make more money and they do all of these things because then they'll be able to taste the grail. It's like, no. You gotta ask the right question. Fascinating.
Yeah. So mind blown.
Yeah. It's so awesome. Good.
It's such a good metaphor for sure.
Right. And that's what it is. It's just this cool metaphor to understand. But that's how I felt, there is a lot of times in my life where I would find success and stuff. Like my business would be killing it, or I'd be dating the person I wanted to date, but I couldn't taste it. I couldn't touch the meaning for some reason. It all felt like I felt barred from it in some way. And I really do believe it's because I was serving the wrong animating force.
Well, I'll tell you, that's my course corrective now, is when I start, tirelessly working a treadmill in some area or aspect of my life, I realize, oh shit, I'm going after the thing that I shouldn't be going after. It's not about that, right? It's not about me. And it's crazy, like, all it is a shift in the mindset, and I can taste it again, right? To use your metaphor. It's like all it is a shift in, and I'm just like, wow, I feel fulfilled again. I feel the satisfactory sense of being and purpose and love. But when I'm going after those things, and I get like down, going off down a rabbit trail or whatever. It's all of a sudden things become tasteless, and then you become insatiable, and bad things happen. So that's a good course corrective in my life.
That's perfectly put, and I think that is, that perspective shift is what a lot of people who, I mean, like in 2020, like, though it is a shit show, people have a lot of opportunity and money, and like, we still have a lot, right? We have lost some things, but we have so much at our disposal. And I think that if you can manage to ask yourself the right questions, if you can manage to tell a better story, as you said, then it will shift that perspective. I went from, and I mean this quite literally, like in 1 week, like very depressed. I had this realization that this life wasn't about me. And actually, when I realized it wasn't about me, the beauty was that I got to be a part of something that was so much bigger than me, right? And it, like, the next week, I could not, I would sit down in the morning to journal about how grateful I was for my life, and it would feel as though the beauty was crushing me. Like that, it was that dramatic, just in fully understanding what all this is about. And that's, I think, why we should take these journeys in the first place, because it's the only thing that makes all of the inevitable pain you're going to go through actually worth it.
Yeah. Well, when I changed my belief system, I was still holding on to the old me while understanding why I need to let go and let God in this scenario, right, in my life. But I couldn't let go. So for the first year, I lost 35 pounds. I lost a bunch of money. I lost all of my friends, right? I was starting to lose my hair. Like, it was manifesting in my physical life and in my environment and in my job and in my relationships, because I just couldn't. I wanted to, I could see my hand white knuckled. I wanted to let go, but but I'm like, I would tell it, let go. And then I wouldn't let go, you know? And
yeah.
But the moment I let go, man, none of those things that I thought were really important, that I was losing my hair and my, you know, muscles and the girl or the friends or whatever. And it's not that they don't matter, but I realized that it didn't matter. Right. I was putting all of the power in those things, and that's not where the power was coming from. Right. So as soon as I let go, everything changed. And then the relationships that I started to uncover were, like you said, the beauty was just breathtaking. You know, the work that I was doing for people became, just incredibly fulfilling. And I was doing the same work like that a year before that, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
3 years where it was the same exact job, same exact work. So yeah, man, I'm right there with you 100%.
Man, I want this conversation to go another 3 hours. I'm coming up on a hard stop though. So before I get to the final question and also for the guests or for the listeners, you know, I will absolutely do my best to have you back on and hopefully in person where we can have a good, like real deep dive into this stuff. But, for the guest or for the listener, how can they support you? How can they follow along with you? Of course, you know, we'll link up the trials in this episode, but if people want to just support you and follow along with your journey, learn from you, what's the best place for them to do that?
Yeah. Instagram and Facebook, Aaron Guyette, just all one word. That's the easiest. I mean, you could check out living.fit. I'm basically building that business structure in this same kind of framework. So that's kind of a cool one. And then Leaders of Leaders is like my passion project. That's the part of me that I pour into basically every area and aspect of my life. Because that's you know, the icebreaker question. That's what gives me life. That's what I'm passionate about. And I don't foresee that changing ever. So you can check out Leaders of Leaders on Instagram as well.
Dope. We'll link both of those or all of those up in the show notes of this episode. If you could have coffee with anybody in the world, dead or alive, fiction or nonfiction, who would it be and what would you want to talk about?
Yeah, it'd be Yeshua or Jesus or Jesus Christ or the Christ or 100% would be that. The looking backwards, right? The most transformative and formative character in history. And there are a lot of, you know, Buddha would be another good one. And, you know, there's a lot of other religions and other factions or whatever, where there's some pretty powerful, but arguably at least, and I can argue the case as well, transform character in history. Everything hinges, right, on his existence. So the beauty is I do get to have coffee with him in my belief system every single day. At the same time, it would be really cool to go back when he was walking on the earth and ask him some just questions about the future and about present and about the past, that, you know, I can read between the lines and some of the story, right? But I don't want to read between the lines. I want to hear it from his mouth today, right now.
Totally. Man, well, I really appreciate you taking the time to share some of your journey and experience with the audience. I think that this was an immensely beneficial conversation for the listener. If they really take this stuff on board, it will be, like you said, a worthwhile adventure, life-changing adventure. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you again for having me, Rick. I appreciate it. Love you, man.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.